Welcome to Game 1 of the 2023 NBA Finals, presented by YouTube TV. Featuring the Eastern Conference champion, Miami Heat. And your Western Conference champion, Denver.
Yeah, NBA Straya, how are you going? I trust you better than the Miami Heat. Jeez, right, this is NBA Straya. I am your host, James Clements. I'm the editor of a very good website. It's called CodeBet. Go check that out. And I'm also on Fox Sports Lab NBA. I'm also in the paper every single day, all the way around this wide brown land of ours. And I'm here in Larry Armour Studios hanging out, giving you the lowdown on all the ins and outs of the NBA Finals. Finals. And boy, howdy, did we get off to a start? That's right, we're talking Game 1 Nuggets Heat. We'll break down how it sort of fit into the three keys of the series and the matchups and everything that we saw. It's going to be pretty fun. Monty Williams got hired by the Detroit Basketball Pistons. That's pretty cool. I dig that. And what else? Oh, yeah. Ja Morant. Adam Silver just gave us the old spoiler alert. We're going to fuck him up, which is amazing. Seriously, it's, we looked into it. We didn't want to take away from the finals. Oh, God, what's going to happen to Ja? They're going to, like, load him into a catapult and fire him into, like, the next county. Anyway, we got That's Not a Knife, Old Mate, No Mate, Spud of the Night, Better Than Lonzo Ball. We got some Yeah Nahs, the unpopular opinion of the day, and our back take, yes, where we're serving up a flame grill taste. Take. There you go. There's an Andrew Gaze Grey Mumber Award for Outstanding Achievement in the Field of Excellence. And that'll be it. We'll finish up with the cooking with Bainesy, but we'll also look ahead to Game 2 on Monday morning. This will serve as your preview show as well for that. Tell you what, it's going to be nice to dig into it too. So let's get into it. Episode 9, I believe 44 of NBA Australia. Let's go!
This is Joe Ingles, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
Watch out for the Shaq attack.
Oh, you better. Oh, you better watch out for the regression to the mean if you're Maxi Struess and Caleb Martin there. Or you better watch out for the Adam Silver attack if you're Ja Morant. Jeez. What's going to happen there? It's chaos. All right, anyway, before we get into it, let's start today's show the way we start every show here at NBA Australia with the daily whip around. Oh, Jim, it's a whip crack. Is that why it's the whip around? Yes, well spotted. Monty Williams is off to coach the Detroit Basketball Pistons. Obviously, after Nick Nurse went to Philly, kind of an interesting one because you've obviously also seen Adrian Griffin picked up by Milwaukee. It's Algonquin for the good land. Monty out of Phoenix into Detroit. Two pretty different situations. You go from a contender to the rebuild. And I guess that's why they went, here, Monty, here's all of the money. Just all of it. The largest contract given to a coach in NBA history. 6 years, $78.5 million. $1 million. $13 million a year? 13.3 maybe? I don't know. I'm no math magician, but that seems like a lot. I do like it because I think if you're a rebuilding team, you need that steady, experienced hand at the tiller. And that's exactly what Detroit need and will get in Monty, right? He's made it to the finals. He's looked after superstars. Just as long as he doesn't give James Wiseman or Jalen Duren the DeAndre Ayton treatment where it's like, hey, DeAndre, play hard. No. He's like, all right, fuck you. I'm never talking to you again. Seriously, we don't have a relationship. I feel like you should have a relationship with your players, even if they piss you off. Even if the relationship is I'm really hard on him because he annoys the fuck out of me. but Monty and DeAndre Ayton, it didn't go great. So either way, the only you know, he's got three big men to deal with there in Detroit, so this will probably go fine. But still, I just kind of like it for Jaden Ivey and Cade Cunningham's development. To go from, like, Dwayne Casey, who I think is a pretty handy coach, pretty good sort of set of foundation, set of basis coach, to then go to Monty, it's pretty good. But 6 years, you kind of need that, right? Because it's like, we're going to be fucking shit for another 2 years at the very least. So please don't fire me in the next 2 years. Give me a 6-year contract. Bang! Off he goes. Kind of like it. Good on you. So who have we got left? Toronto. Phoenix. I still reckon Dallas should have fired Jason Kidd and just picked up Monty. I don't know what Mark Cuban's doing. Very clearly asleep at the wheel, as he has been for a little bit. I mean, that team stinks. Right. Ja Morant. We've uncovered a fair amount of additional information. We probably could have brought it to a head now, but we've made the decision that it would be unfair to these players and these teams to announce the decision in the middle of this series. That's Adam Silver saying the Ja Morant, the punishment is coming down the pike because he and the Players Association have already decided on a suspension for Ja Morant. But it's like, yeah, it's going to be so bad and so fucking brutal to this moron who keeps, he's just addicted to showing guns. Maybe just likes guns. I'm just saying. But when he says, yeah, we've found some additional information. It's like, if you're going to say it's unfair to announce it during the finals, what the fuck was it? Is he thrill-killing drifters? Like, he and his mate are just like driving along and he's got his piece out. Is he shooting cows as he drives past? It's like, brap, brap, brap. Take that, you stinking cows. It's like, what are you doing, Ja? I just fucking love shooting my gun. Seriously. I still think Ja Morant's best way to approach this is go, I'm just a big gun enthusiast. It's not against the law. So I spend my weekends like clay pigeon shooting. I've got a YouTube channel where I break down guns because I fucking love guns, man. I'm just fucking guns, guns, guns. He should definitely do that. Why is nobody in his circle going, Ja, we set up this YouTube channel. We just need, I don't know, a backlog of 4 or 5 videos of you taking apart some of your favorite pieces and putting them back together and explaining like good gun safety and stuff like that and how enthused you are about said guns and that sort of stuff. And then we'll see what the NBA says. What are you doing? Talk about dropping the fucking ball. But either way, I have no idea what Ja's done to piss off Adam Silver. He's like, yeah, we don't want to do that and announce it now because everyone's going to ask me about that rather than the finals. And I'm on a hiding to nothing as it is with Denver and Miami. Oh, think about the ratings. So I still think he should have announced it now. And I don't know. Why not have like a shooting stars competition with Ja Morant in the middle of the finals or something like that? Just a clay shooting competition. Just something. Lean into it, NBA. You know what the NFL would do? Nothing. This is why you're ranked number 2. Anyway, let's get into game 1 of the NBA Finals. With a game wrap. That's right. Game 1 of the NBA Finals is done. I love it. It's exciting. And I'll tell you what, that was a shit pumping. And then it wasn't. Did Miami find something there, bro? What do you think, man? What do you think? Fascinating game because Denver just put one on Miami. As we predicted, as everyone sort of predicted, what I didn't predict was the Heat just to go ice cold from downtown and Jimmy Butler to do sweet fucking dick all about it too, which was pretty worrying if you're the Heat. The thing is, the Heat hit more threes than the Nugs. They turned it over less than the Nugs. And basically, we're pretty good apart from shooting. You know? Like, it's one of those things where you go, how were we not in that? So, well, you went to the free throw line twice, the entire game. And you shot 40% from the floor. Not great, Bob. Not great, I'll tell you that much. So this was a tricky, weird game. So we talked about the three things that have decided the series. It'll be Joker versus Bam. Bam played his ass off. He was awesome this game, 26-13-5, right? But a lot of that was to do with the scheme and the way the Nugs were playing him. It's like this weird drop coverage where they're like, look, if we sag off, I don't know, Kyle Lowry and stuff like that, we'll cover Bam. They're like, fuck it, we'll just have Joker come out a little bit more and we'll pressure their guards. That worked. And then you go, well, it sort of leaves Bam with a whole bunch of space to operate. And they're like, yeah, that's fine, because two's less than three. And you're like, well played. That's good coaching. The other one was obviously Miami on the road. They did look a little bit rattled, scoring 42 points in that first half to, 59 by Denver? Yeesh. And the 42-7 record for Denver is like, yeah, this is like legit tough to fucking play here. They're now 43-7 after that win. And the Mosquito Fleet versus the Nugs size. Always going to be the key to this one. What did the Mosquito Fleet do today, Jim? Fuck nothing, mate. 2 of 23 between Robinson, Strus, and Martin. At least Gabe Vincent got going. He hit 5 threes in the end, but you know, a couple of those cheapies late. Hayward Highsmith as well was rocking and rolling. He had 18 off the bench. But the point being, they limited the types of looks that Strus was getting, the looks that Martin was getting as well, because they could just rotate a shit ton of size across those guys. And so Miami came out in this game. They didn't play Kevin Love at all, which is kind of like, yeah, makes sense. They just went small. They have Strus, Vincent, Martin, and Butler around Bam. And you might go, well, geez, they'd probably get killed on the boards then. And they kind of didn't. They had more offensive rebounds than the Nugs. And the Nugs only out-rebounded them by 2 in the end. That was with MPJ, Aaron Air Gordon, and the Joker out there demolishing the boards. But this is what Miami do, right? They gang rebound really, really well. But it also meant that the size that the Nuggets have on the perimeter just means that they can hand off and switch really easily. And when they're focused, Denver are fucking good on D. And you saw them, right? They bring 2. They could switch 2. And anytime anyone had like a sliver of room on the perimeter, there'd be like 2 Nuggets dudes like right in their face. I feel like there was a stat there that 0 of 10 from downtown, the Heat were on pretty open 3. So maybe they hit a couple more of those, they're in it. But I don't know. The vibe from this game is ouch. Ouch. Because you got to go through the game, right? They had pretty good looks for Jamal right out the gate, Denver. And Joker was like, that's fine, I'm just going to facilitate. Aaron Gordon was like, how good are mismatches though? I'm a foot fucking tall and everybody is trying to play against me. This is sick. Seriously, he's like going, hang on, I'm in the paint against Maxi Strus. This is bloody easy. He airballed a 3, but didn't matter. Jimmy Butler had a baseline jumper and a 3 to start, and then that might have been like the most threatening he looked offensively for most of the game. He had 13 points on the 14 shots to Jimmy Butts. 1 of 2 from downtown. But a lot of the time, you see a team's defense feed its offense. That was exactly what was going on with Denver, right? Like, Miami just could not get any clean, nice looks. Denver was feeding off that defense really, really well. They were playing good D. They were bullying them inside. Gordon had, like, 8 before you could fucking blink in the paint over the top of Strus. Butler got blocked twice in one possession as well, trying to do the same at the other end. And it just sort of, like, Miami were just throwing some punches, and Denver had, like, holding away the little cousin going, all right, keep swinging, dickhead. And MPJ, the way he was playing defense, it's like, yeah, it's pretty, I think Mark, we got to say that you got to give him credit. Michael Porter Jr. is in the running for most improved defender of the last couple of weeks. It's like, Mark, there's been 14. Shut up, idiot. He had 2 blocks in the game, but this is the thing. He's playing against a bunch of dudes who are like half a foot shorter than him anyway. But Michael Porter Jr. against Martin, you got KCP on Strus or Murray on Vincent, and they can switch those 3 dudes really easily. And it left Aaron Gordon to cover Butler. And you're like, yeah, throw a bit more size and a bit of athleticism on Jimmy Butler, make his life hell, and boom, there's your key to the series right fucking there. Gordon had another, but he had 10, he had 12 before you could fucking blink after the first quarter. It's like, what is going on? Joker had 5 assists. He had a beauty to Murray. He could not buy a shot. They're down 8 with 9 minutes already gone in that first quarter. And then it's like, yeah, down 9 essentially out of it. And that was kind of, it almost felt like the Heat, it's always going to be really tough for them to come flying back against a team like the Nugs, whose offense, it's really hard to slow it down. And to be honest, they did a pretty good job. Like, the Nugs only scored 104 points. Mostly that's because in the fourth quarter, they sort of just took the foot off the gas 100%. They still had Joker in there, but that was more about, I feel like, him getting the triple-double. But still, in the second quarter, Bam sort of had that moment where it's like, fucking hell, I'm rolling, mate. He had 14 points through the, halfway through the second quarter. But then the Nugs sort of just ripped off this 9-zip run, right? Got him up 15, and you're like, oh, yeah, this is going to be real hard for Miami to claw back. There's a flurry at the end of the second quarter as well, where Jammer Jamal is knocking in shots. Joker comes alive. He has 10 at the half all of a sudden. Hadn't taken a shot, I think, until the dying seconds of the first quarter. And you get to the half. Aaron Ear Gordon's got 14, 18 for Jammer Jamal. They've shot just a tick under 60%. That is 17-point halftime lead. And you're like, hang on, what is going on here, sir? Well, the Heat were 4 of 17 from downtown and 40% shooting. So just really good defense by Denver feeding that offense. And then they come out of that break, bang, they rip out 7 straight points out of nowhere to Miami. You got Bam, you got Vincent knocking in another 3. But Jam Jamal Murray settles them with the and one, and Martin and Stru still can't buy a shot. I think there's 9 minutes to go in that third quarter. They're 0-13 between them. And you sort of blink twice and you go, oh, Jokic just hit some free throws. Murray's not missing. Bruce Brown's hitting shots and they're up by 20 fucking 4. Like, what just happened? Hang on a second. I was on like on a phone call. But Buddy Drabs has called me. I'm like, hang on. Wait, what is, hey, what? Oh my God. It was gnarly. And I'm sort of watching it going, Jesus. So it was basically a moment. I think it was 60-74. And you turned around and it was 84-60 within a couple of minutes. And that's how dangerous Denver are, right? They will just go, hey, if you have like a bit of a, you know, a 4 minute, well, a 3 minute slump, basically. That's what Denver had until they have a three with 30 seconds left in the third quarter when Lowry hits that three. They go basically 4 minutes without scoring and Denver go, that's cute. Here is a shit ton of points on your head. We're now up 24, sucked in, dickheads. And boom, 40 seconds left. It's a 24-point lead. Lowry gets that three to go, and you sort of go into it going, all right, you're down 21. This game's over. Off you go. Pack her up, boys. Fourth quarter, they're spreading the love as well. There's 24 assists heading into the fourth quarter. They're shooting 56%, the Nugs. And that was the best thing, right? Like, it wasn't just a focal point of Joker just doing absolutely everything or Jam Jamal Murray doing everything. It's the Bruce Browns of the world. It's the Aaron Air Gordon still, you know, hitting shots. Michael Porter Jr. knocking in a couple of threes here and there. El Jefe Green, KCP. And then there's a run. Hang on. What's happening? In the start of the fourth, Lowry's nailing threes off a nice Bam screen. It's back down to 13, like within fucking no time of that fourth quarter. And you go, well, they might have a shot here, but the problem was Joker just goes, that's cool. That's neat. And this is the biggest cheat code, I think. So he just goes, I'll hit some free throws. And this is where it comes into the simple point of, hang on a second, remember how many free throws the Heat had? Oh, that's right, fucking none. They had two of them the entire game. And Joker has this point where it's like 4 minutes to go. He's up to 24 points and 4 minutes to go. It's a 10-point game still because they're just sticking around and just hitting these silly fucking shots. Haywood's Highsmith is just playing out of his brain. And so they've got it down, you know, Denver settled. I think it was like 7 and a bit minutes in. They get back up 16. You're like, yeah, we're all done here. But Bam hits a shot and it's Jam Jamal, like, you know, responds. Gabe Vincent hits a shot. Jimmy Butler hits a shot. And then, you know, like, hang on a second. Haywood Highsmith hits another shot and it's a 10-point game with 4 minutes to go. What is going on? Haywood Highsmith's hitting threes and it's a 9-point game in the fourth quarter. It's a single-digit game. It's like, what just happened? Hang on. This is not how it was going. I'm a bit confused. And that's what happened, right? It was like Highsmith gets that dunk and then he hits a massive three, 5 points straight. It's a single-digit game. It's only 2 minutes to go. It's a 9-point game. And this is the cheat code. when you can just go, we're feeling a bit discombobulated, how do we stay combobulated? We just give Nikola Jokic the ball and just go, all right, steady us down, big fella. He finds KCP for a nice, beautiful little settling jumper. They then get a steal. Gordon gets fouled. He makes both, and that's it. Minute 15 left, 13 down. Packer up. Vincent and Highsmith both make a couple of threes, but they're also, you know, they're still hitting shots down the stretch. So getting to the line, just slowing it all down. They're feeling good. So that's kind of the big cheat code of this. When you can just go, Joker, take the ball, make some decisions, do your thing. And he's like, yeah, it's not a problem, yes. Like, he can and does do that. He'll steady you up. There's no like, oh my God, what do we do? For when you see like Milwaukee and Boston do it against Miami. When Miami just have that sort of sneaky, we're sticking around, we're going to fuck you up. Hey, look over there. Yeah, shank you. Ah, ga, 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 ga. Get him. They're just the sneak attack heat. That's what they do. And Joker goes, yeah, see plenty of sneak attacks in Serbia. Doesn't matter. I smash you, yes? And bang, they're back up 11. They stay back there down the stretch because Michael Porter Jr. gets blocked, misses a three. But then we have a bit of a Jovic on Jokic. Well, Jokic on Jovic crime right at the end with Joker blocking his namesake Nikola Jovic right at the end. And we finish up 104-93. Nugs just sort of hold him at arm's length the entire stretch. And it's that sort of question. I'm going to get to it in yeah, nahs, but do you reckon Miami found something? Or was this very similar to what happened with the Lakers where they're like, oh, I think we found something at the end of game one by putting Rui Hachimura on the Joker. And Joker at the start of game two goes, yeah, that was cute, you fucking idiots. Bang! And off he goes. But they win by 11. And that is the largest win by a team that's making its finals debut since the Spurs back in 99, which is pretty good. Not bad. Good size. It's also one of those ones you go, yeah, Miami is still a fucking 8 seed. Guess what? When you're arrested 1 seed waiting for an 8 seed who just played a game 7 on the road and then played game 1 on the road, yeah, you probably should fuck them up. Denver had a 123.5 offensive rating going into that fourth quarter. So do you think Miami sort of figured it out? Or did Hayward Highsmith just hit some threes while the Nugs were like, eh, we've won this game. Who gives a shit? It kind of feels like the second one to me. But basically, you think about this. Home teams that win game one are 33-25 in game two. They're 45-13 overall in the series. So pretty crazy. Feels like, look, my 4-1 Nuggets pick feels good. Feels great. But I'll tell you what, still got a pretty big chunk of basketball still to play. So let's do a NBA Australia Pro performance of the night.
That's not a knife. That's a knife.
Nikola Jokic. Hello. Second player with a triple-double in his finals debut. Not bloody bad. Who was the first one, Jim? That was Jason Kidd. It's a soft J because he couldn't hit a shot back then. But 27-10-14, he was unreal. He had the 10 assists at halftime. He had the 10-10-4. And it was absolutely fucking amazing. This is the best part about the Jokic experience. And I fucking hate commentators. If you're a fan and you're just tuning in, yeah, Jokic does this all the time. If you're a fan and you're just fucking realizing that the back-to-back MVP is good at basketball, blow it out your ass, you fucking idiots. And also, Mark Jackson, you gotta understand, this man is pretty good. I wasn't so sure I left him off my MVP vote, but Nikola Jokic is good. It's like, no fucking shit, idiot. Anyway, 27-10-14 for Jokic. He was awesome, but so was Jamal Murray. 26 points, 6 rebounds, and also 10 assists. That's right. I believe the list of teammates with 20-10 in a finals game goes Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray, Jordan and Pippen in 92, Jordan and Pippen in 91, and Magic and Worthy in 87. It's a pretty good list. Just saying. So if you're on that list, yeah, I can assume that was the approved performance of the night. But look, to go through and do a bit of box score hunting, as we tend to do here on NBA Australia, 16-6 to Aaron Air Gordon. He really got them off to a flyer. And just like all those easy buckets, it's just so hard to get those back if you're Miami, right? Because you got to work so hard to score. Whereas Gordon's like, I'm in the paint. I'm a foot taller than this guy. Dunk. MPJ with the 14 and 13. He's been a really good rebounder for a little bit now. He shot 5 of 16, but it more felt that he was just sort of like trying to find a bit of rhythm. And he goes 2 of 11 from downtown. And not once did I think, he's a contender for spud of the night. Nah, he just sort of had a couple of weird bunnies in the paint, but then the 11 threes, like if you're that much taller than the other dude, fucking take him. The notorious KCP had the 7 points as well. He only went 1 of 3 from downtown, but Bruce Brown really stepped up. 2 big threes, 10 points, 5 rebounds, and 2 assists. And KCP, he actually shot 3 of 8, but only that's 5 extra shots he shot that weren't threes. He broadened his game. He had a shot earlier, and he hit that really nice settling jump shot late in that fourth quarter after that 4 minute mark, just to go, all right, boys, we're fine, we're fine, we're fine. And for the Heat, it was the 19 from Vincent that sort of really kept the Heat vaguely afloat, but 5 of 10 from downtown. A few of those came a little bit cheap late. 13, 7, and 7 for Butts, though. That was the sort of head-scratcher. The 6 of 14 shooting just was not on, especially against Aaron Air Gordon. The sheer size, just they gave him absolutely no room to drive into. And then, of course, Haywood Highsmith. 2 of 4 from downtown, 7 of 10 from the floor. He was awesome. 18 points for the wee man. And Kyle Lowry, big booty Kyle Lowry, played really well. 3 of 6 from downtown, just knocking in threes like there's no one business. They lost by 11. He was a plus 2 in 26 minutes. Not bloody bad, big booty Kyle Lowry with the 11, 5, and 5. But really, the 40% shooting overall, winning the turnover battle, keeping the Nuggets to 8 of 27 from downtown, but you still let them shoot almost 51%. It's a tough ask for the Heat. But that leads very nicely into
Spud, 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 it is Spud of the Night.
It might have, the Spud of the Night award might go to the bloke who just became the first player in NBA Finals history to attempt at least 10 shots and not score. Yeesh. Maxi Strus. God damn. Also finishes 0 of 9 from downtown. That is equal second worst. Equal second worst in NBA history in the finals. The second worst three-point shooting performance in the NBA Finals ever. Of course, trailing John Starks with the classic 0 for 11 back in the 94 Finals. Tying Steph Curry from 2022. And jumping ahead of J.R. Smith in 15 and 2010 Ray Allen. That was a tough one, Ray. But wow, Maxi Strus stunk it up. But of course, he wasn't alone. No, he wasn't, because Caleb Martin, every Boston fan is like, what the fuck was that? Where the hell was that in our fucking series?
What was that? What the hell was that?
1 of 7 for Caleb Martin. The bloke averaged 19 points in the Boston series. He had 3. 3. He went 1 of 2 from down. He only took 2 threes. That is absolutely chaos. And I'd like to have a beer with Duncan. He completely lost his shot. 3 points in 21 minutes for Duncan Robinson. 1 of 6 from the floor, 1 of 5 from downtown. If you're playing along at home, that is a combined 2 of 23. Gross between the three of them for 6 total points. I'm going to say that's a bit shit. Seriously, Martin and Strus combined to go just the 1 of 17 between them. That's 5.9%. That is literally tied for the worst field goal percentage in the finals by two teammates who started. God damn! That is pretty brutal. Literally, the worst. The worst. It stinks. Absolutely amazing. So you better believe that's some spud of the night gear. Who was old mate? No mates, however.
Old mate, no mates.
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 Who's got no mates today? That would be the Miami Heat. 2 total free throws. Who were they shot by? Was it Jimmy Butler, Jim? No, it was by Haywood Highsmith. He was the only Heater to actually shoot free throws this entire game. This is remarkable. That is the fewest amount of free throws ever attempted
in a playoff game in NBA history. Not even NBA finals history, in playoff history. Two! They were to the line twice. You might go, oh, well, geez, they must have gotten jobbed by the refs. And you're like, yeah, a little. But two free throws doesn't scream, oh, well, the refs really fucked us. It screams, we took a lot of threes, more so than usual. And we took 96 shots, 39 of which were threes. We just took a lot of mid-rangers and we missed most of them. It was pretty crazy to miss 26 threes. Cool. 39 total shots, but you had 96. There was so few drives and forays to the rim because the size of Denver, it just keeps them sort of locked up, stymied up. They're taking these shots from where Denver want them to take the shots. They're like, eh, Jimmy Butler, just shoot mid-rangers to your fucking heart's content, mate. We're just not going to let you get to the line. We're not even going to let you get ahead of steam. See this bloke in front of you? He's bigger than you. You can't fucking run around him. It's simple as that. Same with Martin. Bam, not going to the free throw line was a bit sketchy at times. Where you're like, the big man was, what, the 26, 13, and 5. He was awesome. Shot 13 to 25 from the floor. That's one of those ones you go, yeah, I feel like there should have been some free throws in there, but definitely old mate, no mates vibes of Adam Silver going, yeah, nah, don't let him take any free throws. Fuck him. They fucked me by beating Boston, so I'll fuck them in game one. As simple as that. But it is absolutely remarkable to have only two free throws. Jesus. Who was pantsed the most? Who copped the pantsing in the night? Jimmy Butler literally had like one of those record scratch moments really early on in that game, right? He's just like, cool, I'm going to drive. Blocked. I got the ball back. Blocked. Getting blocked twice on the one possession is just an absolute like record. Yeah, that's me. I guess you can see I'm no longer playing Boston's defense. Fucking hell. It was chaotic. God, they were good. And finally, better than Lonzo Ball.
Lonzo was the best player in high school. He was the best player in college. You think you're going to get to the pros and be like, I made it to the pros, now I can be average. He's coming for everybody.
Coming for everybody. Haywood Highsmith. God damn. Just out there cruising along, having himself a pretty good time, steps in and just goes, oh, hey guys, guess what? I'm like your second best player today. Everyone's like, what the fuck just happened? Haywood Highsmith, you mean that undrafted weird dude? It's like, yep, that's him. And off he went. So you might remember him from, I think it was it game 5? I want to say he had 15 points in Boston. That checks out. And anyway, steps up today, has 18 points. Got the Heat right back in this game out of absolutely nowhere. Almost all by himself. It was absolutely awesome. He was bloody good too. Like he sort of just has these weird little hops and he gives him like a slightly different look, obviously, than Duncan Robinson. And shot better than him today with the 7 of 10 from the floor and 2 of 4 from 3. Just comes flying in out of nowhere. He's like the sort of dude where you look at his stats and like his measurements and it's like, oh, he's 6'4". And then elsewhere it's like, he's 6'7". You're like, I can't tell. He looks a bit small. Is he 6'4"? Maybe. He's listed as a forward. Maybe 6'7". But either way, pretty weird. And today, 18 points, 2 rebounds, 2 steals and a block, 7 of 10 shooting, 2 of 4 from downtown. You bets to believe he's better than Lonzo Ball. We've got some other suggestions for the better than Lonzo Ball segment as well. They'll come up in year Nas. So I'm still taking suggestions because I think we'll leave it for the finals just to send it out this season and then we'll put it to rest. Because maybe if it's like the end of Lonzo's career as well. It feels like probably pretty fitting. So, you know, we'll get to that in a second. Some year nows, which will come right after this.
This is Cam Glidden.
This is Anthony Drimmick.
This is Mitch McCarron.
This is Jason Kadee.
This is Daryl McDonald.
Hey guys, this is Hugh Greenwood.
Yo, what's going on? This is Ellie.
This is Mark Worthington, or commonly known as Wurtho, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
Whoa! All right, let's do it. Susan Yenars, brought to you by the NBA Australia Shop. Go get your merch. Get your merch.
Steve-o.
Get your merch. Get your merch.
Wear it.
Get your merch. Get your merch. Get your merch. Get your merch.
Yeah, do it. NBAAustralia.com/shop and get a hoodie, get a t-shirt, or just click through on the socials. The shop's there as well. So off you go. Get a t-shirt, get a hoodie, support your favorite NBA Australia podcast. AKA this one, because it's the only one. Either way, that'd be really good. Help a brother out. Let's do some yeah nahs. Joey Muzz is coming back to the Celtics, the work experience kid. Does this make him the intern? What do you reckon? Yeah nah. Oh, I don't know if this is a great decision, Brad Stevens, but the work experience kid becomes the intern. Brad Stevens says he's a terrific leader. He'll only get better at anything that he can learn from this year because he's constantly trying to learn. I don't know. I prefer to have a coach who knows what the fuck he's doing. Seriously. Oh, he's learning a lot. It's like, yeah, we're all learning. I'd rather he knew something. Just anything. Yeesh. Anyway, does this mean Brad Stevens is going to Pat Riley him? Yeah, nah. Yeah, you bets to believe that. Because apparently a bunch of the assistant coaches for the Celtics, Ben Sullivan, Aaron Miles, and Mike Mose, are heading to join Ime Udoka down there in Houston, which is fucking hilarious. So good luck rebuilding that bench. Anyway, Monty Williams, is that a good pick for Detroit? Yeah, nah, yeah. I mean, I already kind of mentioned this, right? Like, just having a steady hand, same as Dwayne Casey, but maybe just being able to have a little bit more of a sort of personable approach. Like, everybody fucking loved Monty Williams, apart from DeAndre Ayton, I feel. They're in Phoenix, and then KD comes in, and boom, guess what? The snake gets another victim. How many coaches has KD gone through? It's now, if you think about it, a fucking lot. So just saying, just saying. Anyway, I do like that play, though, for Detroit. Just get a solid veteran coach who's been to a finals, been around, let him build it and go from there. Right, let's get back into the finals. Was this a win for Miami? Yeah, nah, no, because they lost. Anybody goes, oh, well, you see, we figured some shit out. Yeah, when Denver weren't trying, you scored some points. Great job. Yeah, you did clap it up. There you go. Oh, yeah, fantastic. Everybody, yeah. Yeah, we're all very proud of you, Miami. You got it from 24 back down to single digits when Denver weren't trying. So it's definitely a win for Miami. They basically won the game when you think about it that way. seriously. So that is what I kind of mentioned, right? At the end of the sort of game wrap. That, do you think Miami figured out the Nuggets a little bit, or did Denver just sort of pull the foot off the gas a bit? It's definitely the second one. And of course, like, Spo did sort of throw some weird different looks out there, and it did just sort of get the Nugs a little bit wonky. But at the same time, now that Denver have seen that, very similar to what happened in that Lakers series when they go, hang on a second, they put Rui on Joker. Well, how do we deal with that if they try it again in game two? They figured it out and they fucking stomped them. So I'm just saying, probably going to go with Denver took the foot off the gas, and I wouldn't read giant amount into it. But more than anything, like, them sort of limiting that offense from, like, going absolutely ballistic in the second half, like, that sort of gives you at least a bit of scope for, hang on a second, we might be able to limit them. But the problem is, like, Miami had 63 points through three fucking quarters. So let's just pump the brakes a little bit on there. Oh, they could have a chance in game two. Iron Matty S said, yeah, nah, the Nuggets let Bam go off because they know the Heat can't win on twos. Nuggies in five. Yeah, nah, yeah. I did like that, though. They changed that sort of defensive look to go, hey, where can we really get hurt by Miami? And where did Miami beat the piss out of Milwaukee and Boston from? Oh, yeah, the perimeter. So should we cover that pretty well? Yeah, it's probably not a bad idea if we do that. And that's what they did. Bang. 0-9 for Struess, 1-2 for Martin, 1-5 for Robinson. Yeah, Gabe Vincent gets off, but whatever. 5-10. As I said, a few of those were late. It's more about, like, stymieing the driving lanes for Butts, forcing the ball out of his hands, and really limiting his impact. If Bam goes off, cool. 26 points and 25 shots. Good luck winning many games with that. Just saying. It's about the drives. It's about the perimeter shots. And the Nugs use their size and length to really cut them off. I love that. The flip side is, can Miami slow down the Nugs? Yeah, nah. I mean, you kind of saw it in that second half. Yeah, they can slow them down. The problem is, I would be much more trusting if they had literally one more workable big man. Like, Cody Zeller was out there for 8 minutes today, and you're like, well, this is... he's not it. You need, like, a Robin Lopez, like a legit just fucking behemothy kind of dude who knows where to go and where to put his feet. And just, like, if you could wring 12 minutes out of someone like that, maybe. But between Bam having to carry, like, a pretty big offensive burden in this game and then turn around and try to defend Jokic, which he did a pretty good job of, but... Jokic was just fucking like a maestro conducting the orchestra, wasn't he, for most of this game? It's the whirring death machine offense anyway, and he's right there in the middle of it. So it's hard to see them really slowing them down and muddying it up when you've got guys like MPJ going 5 of 16. If he hits 8 of 16, like, this is just fucking packer up, boys. Like, some of those threes that he was getting were so open, and he's so much taller than his defender. And Jamal Murray only went 2 of 7 on threes as well, right? Like, he was driving really, really well. And the threes, like, if the Nugs hit a few more of this, like, it's like, yeah, we're done. So it feels like there's still upside for that Denver offense. You got plenty out of Gordon. You can probably still go to that because I just don't know who on the Heat's going to just go, right, we're going to stop him in the paint. It's like, all right, good luck, Jimmy Butler. You got to think about Jokic and Porter and Jamal Murray at the same time. It's very tough. So, hashtag spoiler alert, I think they win game two. Now, on top of Jez Oz's idea for Better Than Lonzo Ball segment, should be Better Than Markelle Fultz, we've got Wiser Than Wise Man, another number two pick. Better Than Ben Simmons. Better Than Box Hill Benny. Better Than Bags was a good one from Matty Owers. Hey, Jimmy, how about Better Than Marvin Bagley or even D'Lo? I like that. Better Than Bags is pretty good because you can just look at pretty much any kind of forward who puts up empty stats and away you go. Old Nicky DeJong, he went Wiser Than Wiseman. I like that. Who was Wiser Than Wise Man today? Pretty cool. I like it. So send in the rest of the ideas and away we go. We'll figure it out. All right, unpopular opinion of the day.
Now look at me, please. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me.
I'll tell you that much. This Miami team might have faked their way to a finals. Do you think we'll get three games in if the Nugs win three straight and just go, maybe Boston were way more flawed than we thought, and so were the Bucks? Because Denver are fucking steamrolling. I'm just saying. Just worth a thought. It's Friday at our back, and you know what that means? Oh yeah, 4-for-1 TGIF oil drum cans full of icy cold Foster's Lager. That's right, it's Australian for horse piss. I mean beer. That's right, beer. In a fucking can the size of your head. Now glug it down. 4-for-1 only at Outback. Goes great with a flame grilled take. And today's flame grilled take is... Spo was playing rope-a-dope. He knew his guys wouldn't have it in him in game one after playing a grueling 7-game series, only finishing the other day on the road and then jumping straight back on a plane to Denver. This is the old rope-a-dope. Spo's the master coach. Heat in 5 only at Outback. Basically, I feel like that's what Kendrick Perkins is trying to sell. But Kendrick Perkins is also a fucking moron. So, yeah. The Nuggets, look, the sweep is obviously still on. And the Joker, finals MVP, is right there too. All right, Evan Andrew goes Grand Mumba Award for Outstanding Achievement in the Field of Excellence. It's the first Andrew Gay's Grand Mumba. Clap it up. Good claps. Joker is just the second player in NBA history to have lead both teams on either side in points and assists in a finals debut. Last bloke to do it was a bloke by the name of Michael Jordan. You might have heard of him. He had some Gatorade commercials in the 90s. There was also a documentary. But, so remember that 2010 stat line that I was telling you about. How it was basically Jokic and Murray, the only pair of teammates since Pippen and Jordan in a finals game to go 20-10, both of them. And the other ones were Magic and Worthy. Well, if you actually just bump that up to 25-10, which is exactly what happened today, that actually gets rid of Jordan and Pippen, and it's actually just Jokic and Murray and Magic and Worthy. Yeah, it's pretty good. Jesus. Woo, boy! Anytime you're on board with, like, the 87 fucking Lakers, Jesus, do not mind it. All right, Patty Mills Game Day, Baller Game Day Twitter check-in. Very simple one today. Patty's been out there shooting around with his buddy, Yuta Watanabe, which is always pretty funny. And he's like, oh, just a bit of healthy rivalry, bro. Friendly rivalry before the World Cup begins. Looking forward to playing against this guy in his home country. It's pretty good. And there's a picture of Yuta and Patty. Had a great workout with Baller Pat in Hawaii. We'll see you as my enemy. Fucking hell. In the World Cup. Jesus. Sit down there, Yuta. I mean, last time Japan and Australia were enemies, it didn't go great for anybody involved. Just don't mention the war. Anyway, let's do a game preview for game number two on Monday morning. That's right, we actually get a full weekend of no hoops, which is kind of a pain in the ass. But at the same time, at least we get a little bit of a break. And your mate Jim gets an actual weekend. I don't have to do a Sunday show. Amazing. Oh, geez, Jim, we're just all thinking about you, bro. 10 a.m. on Monday. Game number two. How'd we go on the pick today? We went, again, nailed it. That is now 5 straight picks we've correctly got. So that now has us up to 38 of 74 for the playoffs. You little beauty. So I hope you're listening and playing along. The problem was it didn't hit the over today, so that was, to be honest, more on Miami stinking it up. But then, as I sort of said, like the way that they at least limited the Nuggets from just absolutely curb-stomping them. But that's the sort of thing, right? In that third quarter when you're sort of already up 24, you have that moment of like, all right, we can probably just chill a bit. And if Bruce Brown wants to take a shot, let's fucking let him. So, like Miami making more threes, had a better percentage and had fewer turnovers. Like, that's a pretty good sort of start, but they just didn't hit free throws. They didn't do anything else. So, just saying. Bit weird. Anyway, game two. It feels like the preview for this is how you read game one, right? It's one of those things where you look at it and go, do you think Miami figured out a little bit of something or something and they come out absolutely hammering songs against Denver? If you do, then you should go Miami. That's fine. I'm not going to hold it against you. I think you're wrong, but that's your prerogative. Denver are 9.5-point favorites in game two, and that is a very big line. But remember, this is the thing. Miami on the road, covering. It's always a little bit of an ask, but they will, of course, you know, have a couple more days to acclimatize to the altitude. Which would be good for them, obviously. Just be like, oh, man, I can actually breathe while we're playing. This is kind of fun. But the Nuggets have now ripped off 11 straight at home. The Nuggets have covered the line in each of their 7 games against the Heat. And I don't really like their chances in this one. They are now 23-28-1 against the line away from home at Miami. And the Nuggets are now 31-18-1. That's pretty good. So just even in terms of the numbers, I'd be going Denver. But the way that you sort of see a series like this, you go, oh, geez, cool. Denver really just sort of put one on them. What are we going to do now? My one worry would be that we did also see game one against the Lakers was 126-132. So the Nuggets didn't cover that one. Then it was 103-108. Again, the Nuggets didn't cover that. Then the Nuggets came out in game three in LA and smashed them by 11. And then by the two-pointer in game four with the sweep done. So it sort of begs the question, like, do you think Miami can slow down this offense enough to cover that 9.5 points? Tyler Hero, maybe he comes back. My entire vibe is, if Tyler Hero comes back, They do not cover it, and he is just wonky and all out of sorts. And I think Denver cover. But my entire read on this is this should have been a blowout. It was a blowout. Denver sort of relaxed a little bit down the stretch. Miami came back at them hard, threw a couple of weird wonky looks at them. Denver will be a little bit more ready for that in game number two, and I think they will cover that one. So give me Denver -9.5. Again, if I change my mind, because I'll be writing a piece about this for Monday's paper. If I change my mind, I'll tweet it out. So we'll see what happens. But either way, I think it's Denver -9.5. I think we will see a bit more of a limited Bam output because he is out there defending Joker. He's a lot of their offense as well when Jimmy Butler's not doing it. And for him to sort of be that fulcrum, as well as having to defend Joker all the time, it's just a little bit much. We saw it also sort of happen to him against AD, right? In the bubble. And it's like, he can look good, he can look good. It just sort of wears and wears and wears because they just don't have that backup, dude. So it's a bit tough. So, I don't know, it's a bit weird. So I'm going to take Denver -9.5. I just think the wearing death machine offense has a bit more upside. Yeah, Miami missed a shit ton of threes, but I think Denver can probably hit more than 8 at home in game 2. Like, seriously, they took 17 less shots today, Denver. 17! They went to the line 18 more times, but 79 shots to 96 and really put a hurt on them, especially in that first half. They just looked absolutely fantastic. The 59-42, and you're like, yeah, they're going to run away with it. And they basically were, and then they just went, nah, we're cool. The 9.5... I'm going Denver -9.5 for game number 2. I would also, there's like the sort of, talk about the over-under, and I think the over-under for this is about 214.5, which is even lower than it was last game. I'd still probably stick with the over, even though today didn't hit. I think the Heat's last 5 games have hit the under of the total match points, so I would be going Denver with the over, just because, again, I think both teams have like a little bit more upside in their shooters. I mean, Strus and Martin will be a little bit better, obviously. And Denver, I think, just the upside there will be pretty sky high. Jam and Jamal Murray, meanwhile, is on, what, 6 straight games of 25-plus points. It's the longest stretch in his career, so can he keep that up? Maybe not, but I think you might see more from KCP, more Bruce Brown, more MPJ. And it feels like both teams have got a little bit more to sort of show us. So I think the over will hit, and I think Denver should win by about, again, probably 11-12. And away we go. But either way, 10 a.m. on Monday, it's going to be awesome. And that's it for this week, you little beauty. We're going to do some more work. Right, we're back on Monday after game 2. In the meantime, make sure you're following NBA Australia on Twitter, Face EIG, we're all over the socials, you know that. Get around NFL Australia with myself and Gaz. Go subscribe to it. CodeBet as well. You can hear that also daily, breaking down if you're into your footy, your rugby league, anything. Tennis, a bit of soccer. Obviously, plenty of fucking hoops as well. You can go subscribe to that too. NBAAustralia.com/shop. Get your merch. Get your merch. Chuck us a rating review on your podcast app. Whatever it is. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. Whatever one you use. Rate and review it. Chuck a comment. Just anything. Just give me... Oh, I need the feedback, bro. I need the feedback. Either way, it does help out heaps. And as I've said, the fucking back end of my show has just sort of gone all wonky, so any comments and shit would be really good. Big thanks always go to From Oslo for the intro and outro song. Check out the new band House Hats, and big thanks to Joshua Delarangis, Fascinated, Goldmines, Ramshackle Army, Iowa, Section I, Green Green Green, and Dozers for all the tunes you hear throughout the show. So smash them on Bandcamp, Triple J on Earth, Facey, Apple Music, Spotify, Rubel, whatever you use. NBA Australia supports Australian bands, and so should you. Alright, we'll close out with a weekend special cooking with Bainesy. And we'll catch you on Monday for game 2 of the NBA Finals. 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 Will we see another Nuggets smashing? Maybe. Probably. Perhaps. Don't know. Should be good either way. We'll catch you then, you dickheads. Have a good weekend. This is NBA Australia saying look after yourselves, would you? And later, Jose.
Cooking with Bainsey is filmed in front of a live studio audience.
And now it's time for Cooking with Bainsey with your host, Aaron Bangers Baines. G'day, g'day, g'day. Yes, how are you all? Oh, look at yous over there. I see you over there again, Cheryl. Yes, we know that you love it. Oh, this is great. Yeah, g'day. Welcome to Cooking with Bainsey. I am your host, Aaron Bangers Bainsey. All right, so this here episode, we're going to whip up one of my absolute favourite Australian staples. You can have it whenever as well, at night, for dinner, after a big night on the Terps. It's that absolute Aussie classic. It is Hawaiian pizza. Oh, yes, that's right. I love me some Hawaiian pizza, and it's easy as to make, mate. I mean, it definitely helps keeping up this physique, if you know what I mean. I reckon I probably cook about three of these bloody things a week, you know what I'm saying? And also, hey, just for yous out there as well, don't bloody listen to anyone who says shit about pineapple on pizza. They can go and do what I tell every centre in the Eastern Conference of the NBA. They can go fuck themselves, right? You can put whatever the fuck you want on pizza. It's pizza. All right, so anyway, Hawaiian pizza is bloody simple, mate. All you gotta do is go down to your soupy and grab yourself a pizza base. I love the spongy or thick ones, you know. Grab a thing of tomato paste. Now, don't bother with the fancy pants shit with basil or oregano in it unless you want to be like all fancy pants and shit. Because then you just grab a bunch of shredded ham from the deli. Grab a bag of shredded cheese. Now, you can have mozzarella, cheddar, home brand, whatever you want. Doesn't matter. It's just bloody cheese. And the key ingredient, a tin of pineapple chunks. Now, it's pretty easy to whip this bad boy up, so let's get to it. All right, here we go. Now, just whip your base out. There you go. All right, now smother it with the tomato paste. Well, yep, there you go. Smooth her out a bit. Just make sure it's all over the entire thing. Now, dump your ham on there. Yep, all this shredded ham. Now, oh, get your fingers amongst that. Shove that to the edges. There you go. Spread that out nice and even. Yep, there you go. All right, now cover this liberally with the dead pig. Come on, man. You got to put the ham everywhere. Just need hoops and hoops and hoops of ham. Just make sure it's the nice shredded stuff, though. All right. Now, drain your pineapple into the sink. Or you can drain it into a cup and drink that pineapple juice, you know. What bloke doesn't like a cup of pineapple juice, you know what I'm saying, ladies? There we go. Now, fang the chunks of pineapple on there. Just put it everywhere, you know. Just throw it around. And then cover up the entire bloody thing with your shredded cheese. All right. Now, we've got this oven over here. Just wang her in there in the oven. There you go. Just for a good 15, 20 minutes at about 220 degrees Celsius. None of that Fahrenheit bullshit. Now, sit back, grab a tin, and let her cook. Oh, doesn't that bloody well smell delicious? All right. Now, here's one we made a little bit earlier. So you can see once it's browning a bit on the edges and all your cheese is all melty and nice, you whip her out. You chop her up into slices, and Bob is your bloody pizza-loving uncle. Now, give it a sec to cool down before you chow down. Don't burn your bloody tongue, because that cheese will be hot as buggery, eh? So, all right, now it's there. Just get your bloody munch on. And that is an absolute bloody ripper of a meal. The best bit is, and this will impress everyone, right? You can cook it whenever you want. Mates, the missus, kids, everyone bloody loves Hawaiian pizza. And if they don't, just give them the old bangers, don't argue, and go tell them to cook their own bloody pizza. Because this is just bloody delicious, mate. All right, how easy was that? Cool, there you go. That is absolutely unreal. Love me some Hawaiian pizza. All right, so that's it for this week. Tune in next week for a new recipe, and we'll see yous then on the next episode of Cooking with Bainsey.